Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1007, Alpha Males, part 4, 9/11, The Underground Reich, and the Russiagate PSYOP. This is being recorded on May 22nd of the year 2018. In the next two programs, I am going to attempt to do the impossible. I'm going to try to tie together a number of elements and provide some in-depth analysis on some things that are not only in and of themselves very complicated, but which have been deliberately misrepresented. To make a very long story very short, there is no evidence whatsoever that Russia either interfered in our political process or even attempted to. There is the cyber, quote, evidence, unquote, which I have discussed in a number of programs, including For the Record 943. And to make a very long story very short, that is basically a cyber false flag operation. The actual, quote, evidence, unquote, that Russia hacked either Hillary Clinton's emails or the DNC or Podesta's or anybody else's just is, it not only is non-existent, it is frankly ludicrous. In this regard, we should remember that cyber matters, cyber warfare, and cyber espionage afford the author of such acts a tremendous opportunity to create a false flag operation. A cyber false flag operation is an easy thing to do, and it is, by the same token, very difficult to penetrate through the falsehoods of the cover story. The CIA's software, for example, cyber software, is specifically designed to, among other things, imitate Russian cyber events. This is far too long and complex a discussion to go into here. Suffice it to say, I have done that in many programs that are already in the archive and that will be linked to an extent in this program as well. We are being told that Russia, in fact, interfered on behalf of Donald Trump in our electoral process. And we're going to take a look at that in the next two programs. Suffice it to say that not only did Russia not interfere, but this entire, quote, Russiagate PSYOP, or the entire, quote, Russiagate, unquote, operation is a PSYOP. At one level, it is designed to pin the overt emergence of fascism in the U.S. on Russia. In fact, the events that were to spawn the presidency of Donald Trump have been in the works for a long time and are not produced by Russia. But this is a good way of scapegoating Russia for the overt fascist blood fart that is the Trump presidency. It also is a very good way of gaming the Democratic Party for the new Cold War and for further actions against Russia. And the Democrats have fallen for this like a felled tree. They're going to, from Mueller, oh, save us, save us. In fact, this has nothing to do with Russia. It has everything in the world to do with Ukraine and with the covert operation that brought the OUNB successor organizations to power in Ukraine with the Maidan coup of February of 2014. We will go into that in a big way in our next program. Suffice it to say, though, that in the elements that have emerged in connection with Russia Gate, many of them track back to Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, and various aspects of the 9/11 investigation and or cover-up. We are going to go into those in this program. We went into some of them in, for the record, 1006. We could be said to look at in these programs at a series, a progressive series of intelligence operations and cover-ups. In 1006, we took a look at the political CV of Robert Mueller and his role as a U.S. attorney and as head of the FBI in covering up investigations like the BCCI case and the bombing of Pan Am 103 and others that led directly to the Iran-Contra affair. Some of them, such as BCCI, also have direct implications for the September 11th attacks as well. And as head of the FBI in the last decade, Robert Mueller effectively covered up Operation Green Quest, which not only would have led to the role of powerful elements of the Republican Party in networking with elements associated with Al-Qaeda and with the funding not only of Al-Qaeda but Muslim Brotherhood offshoots such as Hamas. It would have effectively, had it been properly pursued, it would have interdicted the ongoing use of Al-Qaeda as, among other things, proxy warriors. As we speak, the bloodbath in Syria has seen the Nusra Front, which basically is Al-Qaeda in Iraq when it operates in Syria, functioning as a proxy warrior element for U.S. intelligence and the CIA. Had Mueller properly investigated that, that would not have happened, or that could not have come to pass. That is but one element, one area in which the Al-Qaeda / Muslim Brotherhood milieu has functioned as proxy warriors for the U.S. There are others. We are going to look at, in this program, elements that figure prominently in the Russiagate, quote, investigation, unquote, and which track back to September 11th. There will be areas of overlap with what we spoke about in, for the record, 1006. We're going to begin by taking a look at the remarkable career of a guy named Felix Sater, S-A-T-E-R. Long story made short, Felix Sater is the point man and has been for a long time for Donald Trump's operations in Russia. We could accurately sum up Donald Trump's operations in Russia as many years at this point, decades of unsuccessful overtures to the power structure in Russia. For all of his attempts at doing that, Donald Trump has yet to have the Trump Tower Moscow or Trump Moscow or any other Russian building or enterprise successfully realized. He has many years of unsuccessful overtures to the Russian power elite. The guy who has been doing that is Felix Sater. Now, when it became clear that Donald Trump certainly had a reasonable chance of becoming the Republican nominee, and then when he did become the Republican nominee and it became at least possible and then very possible to be president of the U.S., the Russians listened more closely. They paid closer attention to the Trump business overtures than they had at first, and not surprisingly at that. Again, he has yet to successfully realize a business venture in Russia. The Russians have rebuffed him at every turn and continue to do so. However, They have begun paying closer attention. We should note that as a presidential candidate and now as President Trump has shamelessly used his office in order to further his business interests around the world, and apparently continues to do just exactly that. We are going to look at Felix Sater. Felix Sater, again, the point man for all of Trump's dealings with Russia, someone we have spoken about in the past. Felix Sater is a spy, period. And many of the operations in which he has been involved involve things involved in the September 11th attacks. Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, the trafficking in precious stones to finance Al-Qaeda, dealing with networks that have been funding Al-Qaeda, which brings him right back to the, or puts him in the milieu of the Operation Green Quest investigation, which was covered up by Robert Mueller, and Stinger missiles in Afghanistan. Again, Felix Sater is the point man for Trump's dealings with Russia. Felix Sater is a spy, not a Russian spy, but an American spy. I don't think it is much of a reach at all to see Trump's attempted penetration of Moscow or the Russian market as being at an intelligence level, an intelligence operation, a penetration operation. Trump himself, of course, wants very much to make money. And I think if one looks at the underground Reich and the money behind Donald Trump, for example, the Deutsche Bank, the primary financial vehicle for much of Trump's operations, I think we are also looking at something of the traditional German Ostpolitik. But in order to understand the Russiagate operation, let's look at Felix Sater. Again, he is the point man for Trump's dealings with Russia, and Felix Sater is a spook. He is not a formal CIA or DIA or FBI officer. He isn't a GS 12 or 14 or whatever. He will not be getting a pension. He is an intelligence agent, not an intelligence officer. Nonetheless, he is a spy, a spook, and a very important one, and many of his most important operations deal with one aspect of another or another, with Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, and or the September 11th attacks. I think that is one of the reasons why Robert Mueller, a very special prosecutor indeed, is in the position of overseeing this operation, because he certainly knows where the bodies are buried and which crypts should not be looked into in order to successfully keep those bodies buried. We're going to begin by taking a look at an article from BuzzFeed from March 12th of 2018. This is by Anthony Cormier, or Cormier, C-O-R-M-I-E-R, and Jason Leopold, L-E-O-P-O-L-D. How a player in the Trump-Russia scandal led a double life as an American spy. In the sprawling Trump-Russia investigation, one name constantly pops up, Felix Sater. In story after story, Sater is described as Donald Trump's former business partner, a convicted stock swindler who was born in the Soviet Union, worked in Russia, tried to win Trump a deal in Moscow, and even helped broker a Ukrainian peace plan that Vladimir Putin would have loved. Basically, he is portrayed as something just short of a Russian spy. Effectively, he has been a spy, but for the United States.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
For the first time, BuzzFeed News has verified the surprising sweep of Sater's undercover work and many of his specific exploits. He worked as an asset for the CIA and the Defense Intelligence Agency, or DIA, and tracked Osama bin Laden. Then, he worked for more than a decade for the FBI, providing intel on everything from the mob to North Korea's drive for nuclear weapons. He still operates as a source for the Bureau, according to two current FBI agents, skipping down. In any event, the Moscow meeting with Blaine launched Seifert's work for the U.S. government, which would last for the better part of two decades. He said he was not paid for his work, which two Justice Department officials confirmed, but did it to help his country and for the, quote, thrill, unquote. One of Seifert's early operations involved the pursuit in 1998 of Stinger anti-aircraft missiles in Afghanistan. The CIA had originally given the missiles to the Mujahideen to oust the Soviets during their occupation of Afghanistan, but now the agency wanted to prevent them from falling into the hands of radicalized jihadists. Seifert managed to find some, complete with their serial numbers. Seifert's attorney, Robert Wolf, said he acted as his conduit to the CIA. As Wolf tells it, he called someone he had long known, David Kendall, Bill Clinton's lawyer, telling him that he had serial numbers for the Stinger missiles that the Clinton administration had been trying to obtain. Kendall, Wolf said, called back and said he had spoken with President Clinton and that Wolf should call Robert M. McNamara, Jr., the CIA's general counsel. During the phone call with McNamara, Wolf read out the serial numbers for the Stinger missiles. But intelligence sources told BuzzFeed News CIA officials were skeptical, so Seifert provided photographs of the missiles with their serial numbers and a copy of a daily newspaper to prove the photo was current. Two former intelligence officers and an FBI agent confirmed that Seifert had provided the photographs, an incident they said bolstered his credibility. Meanwhile, Wolf recalled McNamara brokered a meeting at a restaurant near the CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, which was attended by Wolf and two employees of the CIA's clandestine division, an operations officer, and a CIA attorney named Steve Hermes, H-E-R-M-E-S, spelled like the Greek god, the messenger god, Mercury. From the next year or so, Wolf said, he talked regularly with Hermes by payphone or landline when Seifert wanted to pass on new information or when the CIA wanted more intelligence. Quote, we just went back and forth for months and months about Al-Qaeda, bin Laden, and the return of the Stingers, Wolf said. Skipping down. In August of 1998, President Bill Clinton authorized Operation Infinite Reach, a bombing strike against Al-Qaeda in retaliation for the terror attacks on the U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania, which killed 224 people. Seifert, 10 current and former intelligence and law enforcement officials said, supplemented U.S. intelligence by providing location coordinates for Al-Qaeda camps that the U.S. military ultimately bombed in Khost, Afghanistan. BuzzFeed News also confirmed another 1998 mission in which Seifert infiltrated the Afghan precious stone market to find dealers who were laundering money for Al-Qaeda. Seifert found his own precious stones dealer from New York City's 47th Street Diamond District and brought him to the Middle East to make the ruse seem more authentic. An FBI source said the Justice Department later confirmed this detail in court filings that remained under seal. BuzzFeed News reviewed an internal government document about the mission in which an intelligence official characterized the information Seifert passed on as, quote, highly sensitive intelligence, unquote. Skipping down again, another 9/11-related investigation. Seifert developed a close bond with an intelligence officer working for the Northern Alliance, the Afghan militia led by Ahmed Shah Massoud, the fierce and beloved fighter called the Lion of Panjshir. As the Northern Alliance fought Islamists, its intelligence officer fed information to Sater, according to both Sater and a former FBI agent. Later in 1998, Sater was vacationing in Italy with his family when the Afghan intelligence officer called with five satellite phone numbers belonging to Osama bin Laden. He asked Sater to pass the numbers along to officials in the U.S. Sater said he set up Delaware LLCs in the U.S. for the, quote, Bank of Kabul, unquote, and the, quote, Bank of Afghanistan, unquote. He registered websites to convince the Northern Alliance source that he was serious about his intentions, going so far, he said, as to print out the corporate registrations, adorn them with ribbons, and use a wax stamp to make them seem more official. He said he mailed the documents and a satellite phone to the source. But soon, according to three former FBI agents, an intelligence official, and a Department of Justice official, Sater reported back to intelligence agencies on the results of coalition bombings, kills on the battlefield, the financial networks behind the 9/11 bombers and other Al-Qaeda members worldwide, and even the identity of a New Mexico company believed to be laundering terror funds in the U.S. Now again, this puts Sater right in the middle of the Operation Green Quest milieu. That was one of the critical aspects that was covered up by Robert Mueller as head of the FBI. Had it been properly investigated, it would have revealed the profound links between the Bush administration and the GOP and the targets of the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids, and it also would have compromised the continued and ongoing use of Al-Qaeda and Muslim Brotherhood jihadists as proxy warriors in Syria, in the Caucasus, inside Russia, and elsewhere around the world. This last couple of sentences again. Sater's Afghan intelligence sources funneled to him copies. Actually, I'm beginning again. But soon, according to three former FBI agents, an intelligence official, and a Department of Justice official, Sater reported back to intelligence agencies on the results of coalition bombings, kills on the battlefield, the financial networks behind the 9/11 bombers and other Al-Qaeda members worldwide, and even the identity of a New Mexico company believed to be laundering terror funds in the U.S. Sater's Afghan intelligence source fumbled to him copies of Al-Qaeda passports, jihadi escape routes, the locations of fighters, and weapons caches. He described the source as a, quote, gold mine, unquote, but it was only much later that Sater learned that the information originated inside of Al-Qaeda's hideouts. According to a former senior Justice Department official and a former FBI agent with knowledge of Sater's work, Sater's source had his own source. Taliban's Mullah Omar's personal secretary, who was living inside a cave with Osama bin Laden. Skipping down again. Said another top intelligence official who worked directly on terror cases before and after 9/11, quote, Felix likely does not realize how important his work has been in saving American lives. What he did on behalf of the U.S. for more than a decade outweighs any of the bad deeds from his youth, unquote. Sater, the official said, deserves a commendation, unquote. Again, Felix Sater is and for many years had been the point man for Trump's dealings with Russia. I don't think it is much of a reach at all to see those dealings as a projected penetration operation of Russia by U.S. intel at one level. And again, the Russians, who I'm sure the FSB, their intelligence service, knows about Sager and certainly knows about Donald Trump, involved in real estate and casinos. Those are major money laundering potential operations. I am sure that they realized just what Trump was, who Felix Sager was, and what this whole thing was. Again, they paid no attention to him. Then when it became clear that he might be the Republican nominee, they began paying more attention to him. Then when he did become the Republican nominee, they paid more attention yet. And when he became president, they paid more attention still. But still, no business operations by Trump in Russia. As late as January of 2017, Felix Sager, Trump attorney Michael Cohen, and a Ukrainian fascist parliamentarian named Andrei Archimenko, whom we will deal with at greater length in For the Record 1008, and whom we dealt with in For the Record 967, were involved in proposing a ceasefire in eastern Ukraine that was not a pro-Russian operation, but rather an anti-Russian operation, the gist of which was to develop the atomic power capabilities not only of Russia but elsewhere in parts of the former Soviet Union in order to wean those areas further away from Russia by eliminating their dependence on the old Soviet electrical grid. The point being, it was not a pro-Russian operation, but explicitly an anti-Russian operation, involving Andrei Archimenko, who was Provisektor. That is one of the vigilant fascist successors to the OUNB, World War II collaborationist fascist network that we have looked at for many years. Now, back to the September 11th connections. In our last program, we talked about Mohammed Atta and the Karl Duisberg Society, or Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft. We're going to come back to that from the Mad Cow Morning News of April 24th of 2003. Mohammed Atta worked for elite U.S.-German government exchange program, this by Daniel Hopsicker. For at least 4 years while living in Hamburg during the 1990s, terrorist ringleader Mohammed Atta was part of a joint venture, unquote, between the U.S. and German governments. The Mad Cow Morning News has learned an elite international exchange program run by a little-known private organization with close ties to powerful American political figures like David Rockefeller and former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. I would add it also has even more profound links to German heavy industry and finance going back to the pre-World War II period. It is named after Karl Duisberg, the former CEO of Bayer, one of the central companies in IG Farben and a major pharmaceutical manufacturer to this date. Skipping down in the article, the jointly funded government effort picked up the tab for Atta on sojourns in Cairo, Istanbul, and Aleppo in Syria during the years 1994 and 1995, as well as employing him as a, quote, tutor, unquote, and seminar participant during 1996 and 1997. Moreover, Atta's financial relationship with the U.S. German government effort may even have extended back to his initial move from Egypt to Germany in 1992 after being recruited in Cairo by a mysterious German couple dubbed the Hijackers' Sponsors in a recent news account in the Chicago Tribune. By the way, this article from April of 2003. Continuing. Mohammed Atta, before becoming a terrorist ringleader, enjoyed the patronage of a government initiative known as the Congress Bundestag Program, overseen by the U.S. State Department and the German Ministry of Economic Development, the German equivalent of the U.S. Agency for International Development, busy currently supervising the secretive bidding race for tens of billions of dollars of post-war reconstruction contracts in Iraq.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
News that Mohammed Atta had been on the payroll of the Elite International Program surfaced in a curious way just a month after the 9/11 attack. A brief 7-line report by German newspaper Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung on October 18, 2001, under the headline, "Atta was tutor for scholarship holders," unquote. The story quoted a spokesman for the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft, described as a German international further education organization, as having admitted paying Hamburg cadre principal Atta as a scholarship holder, unquote, and tutor, unquote, between 1995 and 1997. But what makes the story curious is that the German paper concealed the shocking implications of their story, that Mohammed Atta had been on the payroll of a joint U.S.-German government program through the simple expedient of neglecting to mention that the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft was merely a private entity set up to administer the exchange, unquote, initiative of the two governments. The U.S. end of the program is run out of an address at the United Nations Plaza in New York by CBS International. The letters stand for Karl Duisberg Society, also the name of its German counterpart in Cologne, Germany, the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft. Both are named for Karl Duisberg, a German chemist and industrialist who headed the Bayer Corporation during the 1920s. Skipping down. And it talks about Henry Kissinger. And then CBS International states the organization's literature provides opportunities for young German engineers. Mohammed Atta wasn't, strictly speaking, a young German engineer, but apparently Kissinger's praise for, quote, career development programs for participants from other countries as well had been taken to heart by the friendly folks at the Karl Duisberg Society. Quote, "These young German engineers earn real-world experience and are given assignments to contribute from the start," a program spokesman enthused in a newspaper interview. The organization is today understandably shy about mentioning that their most famous recent graduates' real-world experience included murdering almost 3,000 people in New York City in slightly less than 2 hours. A financial relationship between the terrorist ringleader and the U.S. and German governments has not previously even been hinted at in America's major media. The conspiracy-minded might conclude that the fact that the scoop is going to the mad cow's morning news may owe something to the program's raft of politically powerful boosters. Having big juice in high places may also explain more equally curious omissions on a second story about Mohammed Atta's time in Germany, which appeared recently in the March 7, 2003 Chicago Tribune under the headline, "9/11 Haunts Hijackers' Sponsors. German Couple Talks of Living with Pilot Atta," unquote. Skipping down. The article describes the 1992 meeting in Cairo between Atta and a German couple running a, quote, international student exchange program, a meeting which the Tribune says led Atta to move to Hamburg. During a visit to the Egyptian capital in the fall of 1991, the Tribune reported, the German couple had stayed with friends who knew Atta's father, a Cairo lawyer, and his father's friends had then introduced the German couple to Atta. Atta, who had recently graduated with a degree in architectural engineering from the University of Cairo, told the couple he wanted to study architecture in Germany, but he had no particular idea where he should go, the paper reported. Though the article neglects to mention it, the reason Atta found himself with, quote, no particular idea where he should go, unquote, was because although he had studied engineering at a prestigious Cairo university, he had not fared well enough to gain admission to its graduate school. The paper quotes the German wife telling investigators, quote, "In this first conversation, we suggested he continue his studies in Hamburg and offered him a place to live at our house, unquote. Atta, she states, accepted their offer right away. This magnanimous gesture by the German couple to an undistinguished young man they have just met raises serious questions. Perhaps their gesture is just the very milk of human kindness. Perhaps it is something else. Quote, why did this German couple running an international exchange program leap at the opportunity to help a young man not considered promising enough to gain entrance to graduate school in Cairo and offer him a place to live at their house? The Tribune does not say, and they have made it difficult for anyone else to follow up on their story because they neglected to identify either the couple or the, quote, international program, unquote, they ran by name. But although Tribune correspondent Stevenson Swanson cites the German couple for, quote, having played such an important role in Atta's move to Germany, unquote, he never gives either their names or that of the organization they worked for. This is some curious, if you know what we mean. After all, the story is 1,200 words in length, so it's not as if they don't have room to print the names, is it? Jane and John Doe from Help a Student International, unquote, would have been enough. You know who, what, when, where, why. So either the Tribune just forgot the who, or something even weirder happened. After studying German in Cairo, Atta arrived in Germany on July 24, 1992, according to investigators' records, and then lived rent-free for at least the next 6 months in the couple's home in a quiet, middle-class neighborhood. And since just 2 years later, Atta was on the payroll of the Congress Bundestag program, it is reasonable to conclude, and no thanks to the Chicago Tribune, that it was also the, quote, exchange program, unquote, responsible for bringing Atta to Germany in the first place. CDS International's elite sponsors are apparently influential enough to have kept their organization's name out of the newspapers, or at any rate, out of the Chicago Tribune. As we looked at in, among other programs, For the Record 484 and also 761, and again in 1006, our last program, according to the BKA, the German Federal Police, the Bundeskriminalamt, the German equivalent of the FBI, in South Florida, Mohammed Atta was hanging out with or associating with the sons, and in one case, the daughter of prominent German industrialists. This should not come as a surprise, given who the or what the Carl Duisberg Society or Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft is. From what used to be their website, the History of the Carl Duisberg Society, and by the way, in 2011, the CDS merged with Cultural Vistas, or became part of Cultural Vistas. That was the merging of the Association for International Practical Training, an American program, with CDS International. One can check the Wikipedia entry for that. The Association for International Practical Training, the former American element of what is now Cultural Vistas with CDS International, gives every indication of being an intelligence-connected operation. Now, again, the CDS, the Carl Duisberg Society, is part of Cultural Vistas. Briefly, repeating again the history of the Carl Duisberg Society from their web entry of 2003. In the 1920s, Carl Duisberg, general director of Bayer AG in Germany, envisioned sending German students to the U.S. on work-study programs. Duisberg was convinced that international practical training was critical to the growth of German industry. This is in the 1920s, when corporate America was investing big time with German industry, and those investments blossomed into some of the most important firms that drove the Nazi war machine in World War II and that went on to become key players in not only the post-World War II corporate landscape of Germany, in that capacity operating under the Bormann Flight Capital Network, but they also became powerful international, transnational players as well. Continuing with the history of the Karl Duisberg Society. Many of the returning trainees later rose to prominent positions at AEG, Bayer, Bosch, Daimler-Benz, and Siemens, bringing with them new methods for mass production, new ideas, and new business practices. Following World War II, alumni from the first exchanges founded the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft, or CDG, in 1949 to help engineers, businessmen, and farmers gain international work experience necessary for the rebuilding of Germany. The point being, when it says many of the returning trainees later rose to prominent positions at AEG, that's German General Electric, 30% owned by U.S., GE, Bayer, Bosch, Daimler-Benz, and Siemens, this is during the Second World War. I also have from the 2003 iteration of the CDS, the Karl Duisberg Society website, their board of directors. It reads like a who's who of executives with the most prominent elements of corporate Germany, but also some American participants as well. Now, one of the fellowships that is available under the Cultural Vistas, the merging of the Karl Duisberg Society, which sponsored Mohammed Atta's operations, with the Association for International Practical Training, one of their subsidiary elements is the Alpha Fellowship Program. And that is no longer, there is no longer any available text about that. But from the Karl Duisberg Society website as of 2006, Alpha Fellowship Program. Nearly 15 years after the fall of the Soviet Union, Cold War era policies and concepts continue to affect U.S. relations with Russia. The Alpha Fellowship Program is designed to address this problem. That operates the Alpha Fellowship Program under the auspices of the Alpha Conglomerate, not only the Alpha Bank, but related industrial and financial operations. This is the largest Russian bank. The available evidence suggests, however, that it is not a Kremlin tool, although it certainly has profound connections throughout Russia, but that it rather is a Russian Bormann property and certainly has profound connections not only to elements associated with the Iraqgate scandal, major drug trafficking, the Iran-Contra scandal, but also to the operations of Mark Rich. Mark Rich was a commodities dealer, and he was pardoned at the very end of Bill Clinton's administration. The fellow who was appointed to investigate the Mark Rich pardon was none other than James Comey, who was head of the FBI and helped to deep six Hillary Clinton's candidacy, as many know. From an AP story of June 8th of 2001, Mark Rich to sell commodities operation to Russian group fails. And it talks about Mark Rich was going to sell his operations to Crown Out Resources, which is a subsidiary of the Alpha Group conglomerate. In the 2016 presidential campaign, a server registered to the Trump campaign began communicating with a computer that was under the control of the Alpha Bank. This led to speculation that this involved Russia dealing with this was a Russian communication with the Trump campaign. However, remember that the Alpha Fellowship Program is under the auspices of the Karl Duisberg Society. And as we looked at in, for the record, 530, 536, and 573, the Alpha Bank has more connections than the switchboard, including to powerful U.S. and international criminal elements. Now, One of the principal figures in the Crown Alpha Network is a Liechtenstein politician named Dr. Norbert Seeger. In a Justice Department filing, he has described Dr. Norbert Seeger, Rechtsanwalt Vaduz Liechtenstein, information includes knowledge of facts pertaining to role of Crown Finance Foundation, again, a subsidiary of Alpha, and other Crown entities in money laundering and tax evasion activities.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
As we looked at in For the Record 536, the country of Liechtenstein, which basically has a whopping total of 32,000 people, is not only a monarchy closely connected to the Habsburg monarchy, the old house of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It is something of a lean, mean money laundering machine, vertically integrated, and for a time in 2001, under the total control of Prince Hans Adam II. Now, the total control by Prince Hans Adam II came courtesy of some Liechtenstein political machinations that were the result of the Progressive Citizens Party. Now, the Wikipedia entry on the political system of Liechtenstein, which has changed dramatically since the 2006 entry, reads in part as follows. On the basis of names put forward by the Parliament of Liechtenstein, the Prince, again Hans Adam II, nominates the government district and high court judges, the judges of the Supreme Court, and the presidents and their deputies of the Constitutional Court and the Administrative Court of Appeal. The Prince's other authorities include exercising the right to mitigate and commute punishments that have been imposed with legal force, and the abolition, i.e., the dismissal of investigations that have been initiated. All judgments are issued in the name of the Prince. What this basically did was to make Hans Adam II, the head of the House of Liechtenstein, the only absolute monarch in Europe. Granted that the country over which he was the absolute monarch had a total of 32,000 people, but it gave Prince Hans Adam II complete control over the judicial system of Liechtenstein and the ability to neutralize completely any legal proceeding or any legal penalties that had been awarded by courts in Liechtenstein. The major factor in the Progressive Citizens Party that gave Prince Hans Adam that power was Norbert Seeger of the Crown Alpha subsidiary, okay? I realize this is, you think this is complicated. Wait till you see what we're going to get into in our next program. In Liechtenstein, again, a whopping 32,000 people. It is a lean, mean money laundering machine. The Bank Alpaqua was incorporated in the House of Liechtenstein. So when, in early 2001, the Progressive Citizens Party, featuring Norbert Seeger of the Crown Alpha Foundation, gave Prince Hans Adam complete control over the Liechtensteiner court system, that enabled him to completely regulate and neutralize any investigations into the Bank Alpaqua. And the Bank Alpaqua was the major focal point, arguably, of the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids. And Operation Green Quest was basically deep-sixed by Robert Mueller, who's head of the FBI. I realize I'm going quickly due to the limitations of time. When the written descriptions for this program are made available, I'm hoping that it will make this concatenation less opaque than it may seem at this point in time. Again, Norbert Seeger of the Progressive Citizens Party of Liechtenstein makes Prince Hans Adam the only absolute monarch in Europe, gives Prince Hans Adam the right to completely neutralize any judicial proceedings in Liechtenstein. That is where the Bank Alpaca was incorporated, and the Bank Alpaca had an unlimited line of credit for Al-Qaeda. And the fellow Ali bin Musalim, who oversaw that, was found dead in his apartment a month after that became public. And he had been under indictment in 1983 in the U.S. for attempting to corner the silver market. That places him in league with, among others, Nelson Bunker Hunt of the famous Texas ultra-right-wing Hunt family. Now, back to Liechtenstein, back to the Bank Alpaca. A major subsidiary element of the Bank Alpaca was the Aesop Trust, A-S-A-T, and Trust, of course, T-R-U-S-T. I aired in past programs, I described that as being headed up by Martin Wachter. That is true, at least as of 2003-2006. Wachter, W-A-C-H-T-E-R. I described him as a member of the royal family of Liechtenstein. That is not true. He is head of the Aesop Trust, but there are some profound connections between the Aesop Trust, Bank Alpaca subsidiary in Liechtenstein, and the House of Liechtenstein. From the Forward publication of October 17th of 2003, Terror Fund Trail Leads to Alpine Kingdom by Mark Perelman, P-E-R-E-L-M-A-N. Skipping down. One company in the Alpaca galaxy that was designated by the U.S. and the U.N. as a terror-related entity is a Liechtenstein entity called Aesop Trust. Copies of business registration documents on file with the authorities in Liechtenstein show that Aesop Trust has been intimately involved with the Alpaca network during the last 30 years, registering changes in company names, personnel, and financial structure, which may explain why Aesop Trust landed on the American and UN terrorist lists. Skipping down. The records also shed light on the involvement of one member of the royal family of Liechtenstein in Aesop Trust. According to the documents, deceased Prince Emmanuel von Und zu Liechtenstein became a board member of the Aesop Trust in May of 1970 and stayed until November of 1990 when he was replaced by Martin Wachter, the Trust's current director. Florian Krenkel, a spokesman for the royal family, said Prince Emmanuel had died in 1987 and that he was a distant cousin from ruling Prince Hans Adam II, skipping down. There also appears to be some links between Aesop Trust and a bank owned by the Liechtenstein royal family. Several Aesop Trust documents feature on their letterheads Bank in Liechtenstein AG beneath, quote, Aesop Trust, unquote. The Royal Family Bank has changed its name and is now called LGP Bank. A telephone and email query to the bank's spokesman Hans Martin Ueringer, U-E-H-R-I-N-G-E-R, went unreturned. So again, Norbert Seeger of Crown Alpha makes Hans Adam, that party makes Hans Adam Europe's only absolute monarch as of 2001, with the ability to neutralize any court proceedings or judicial investigations or sentencing in Liechtenstein. Liechtenstein is where the Bank Alpaca was incorporated, and the Aesop Trust, a subsidiary of Bank Alpaca, had as a board member a member of the House of Liechtenstein, and also had links with the Bank of the royal family of Liechtenstein. Bear in mind that, again, the Alpha Bank, although it is Russia's largest, it is part of a conglomerate, has more connections than a switchboard, profound criminal connections with links to Iran-Contra, Iraqgate, all sorts of dealings with the Bush administration, Dick Cheney, Halliburton, for the records, 530, 536, and 573 go into that. It is ruled over by Prince Hans Adam II. Liechtenstein is, that is. The Alpha Foundation is part is a subsidiary element of what in 2003-2006 was the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft that has now merged and is part of a different entity, which is basically the CDS plus yet another institution. That is the Cultural Vistas nonprofit. But again, Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft has a subsidiary operation called the Alpha Foundation, linked to the Alpha Bank and the Alpha Conglomerate. A member of the Alpha Conglomerate, the Crown Alpha Foundation, is the aforementioned Norbert Seeger, whose Progressive Citizens Party makes Hans Adam an absolute monarch in 2001, where he can neutralize any investigations into anything in the Liechtensteiner Principality, including Aesop Trust and Bank Alpaca. Confused? Well, that is the idea. This is not supposed to be transparent. This is supposed to confuse the bloody hell out of anybody and everything. We are going to conclude with an article that will be a bridge to our next discussion, and that is the historical connection between the House of Liechtenstein. Again, it's a monarchy, an absolute monarchy as of 2001, courtesy of Norbert Seeger of Crown Alpha and the Progressive Citizens Party. The House of Liechtenstein appears to be a subsidiary of the House of Habsburg. From the blisty.cz website, interview with Prince Hans Adam II. From Ladislav Cahoon, to what degree does your family feel spiritually akin to the Habsburg dynasty? Do you know that in the Czech and Moravian awareness, you were always considered the house closest to the Habsburg dynasty? Prince Hans Adam II. My grandmother was a sister of the Archduke Franz Ferdinand, who was killed in Sarajevo. This is perhaps the reason why in the Czech and Moravian awareness, the Liechtenstein house is considered the closest to the Habsburg dynasty. Historically, one has to say that the Liechtenstein family became a foreign dynasty with the end of the Holy Roman Empire and were therefore quite close to the Habsburg dynasty. A number of those foreign dynasties kept properties in the Austro-Hungarian Empire after 1806, as the Liechtensteins did. They were also very often closer related to the Habsburg dynasty through marriage. Just think about Empress Sisi, S-I-S-S-I, the wife of Emperor Franz Josef II. The point being that the House of Liechtenstein, whose Prince Hans Adam II we have been talking about, is a subsidiary of the House of Habsburg, the ruling house of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And through the complex that we have talked about, Norbert Seeger, the Progressive Citizens Party, Prince Hans Adam of the Habsburg subsidiary of the House of Liechtenstein was given complete control over legal proceedings in Liechtenstein in 2001, the year of the September 11th attacks. And the Alpha Fellowship is a subsidiary of the Karl Duisberg Society that trafficked Mohammed Atta around. Felix Sater, the point man for Trump's dealings with Russia, a U.S. spy dealing with many aspects of the September 11th related investigations, including investigating the financing of Al-Qaeda. This, in my opinion, is why Robert Mueller was appointed the special prosecutor. Not only could he be trusted to keep buried bodies securely in their crypts, but he has overseen investigations that tracked from Iran-Contra through September 11th and right on up through the Russiagate PSYOP. This concludes For the Record Program 1007, Alpha Males, Part 4, 9-11, The Underground Reich, and the Russiagate PSYOP. This is being recorded on May 22nd of 2018. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.